My name is Bill McBride. We're going to spend the next hour and a half together. I'm going to take you through a little bit of things that have changed in the last year in the industry based on things that I've learned from others. Okay, everything in my presentation is, there's about 1.5% originality and 98.5% stolen from other people that I respect and think have it figured out a little bit better than I. So we're going to get into some details about what I consider the ideal health club delivery system as presented against the background of what's going on in the industry, which is different than it's been in the last 10 years. How many people have been to one of my sessions at IRSA before? Please raise your hands. Okay. For those of you that have been here, there's going to be some similarity in this. That's because I think some of this stuff is timeless principles that don't change, universal laws, if you will. But there's a lot of updated information as far as approach and background. So I don't think it will be boring for you if you've been here before, but you will see some things you've seen before. Okay? Any questions before we start? This session is good for CECs. You know how to do that in the books. You get your forms for the CECs if you want to submit for those. They ask that you fill out evaluations after the course. Please turn your cell phones off. If you have any questions about anything that we cover today, feel free, raise your hand. IRSA is the best forum in the industry for learning from each other and networking. So many of the best ideas that you'll get will be from things that you talk to people in the hallways about. So bring up any question, any tangent, any idea. Just try and keep it remotely connected to the health club industry. Okay? And we'll take those as they come up. My name is Bill McBride. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Club One. We are a commercial health club company / community center management company / corporate fitness center management company based in San Francisco. We operate in multiple channels. We run clubs that we own with our brand. We run clubs that other people own, but we run it with our brand. We manage worksite fitness centers. Motorola, for example, their campuses around the country are managed by Club One people. AOL in Herndon, Virginia. Electronic Arts. There's about 60 of those types of sites around the country where we manage the fitness offering. We also have a big play in community center management. JCC's in the Bay Area, Indian Community Center, and we'll manage those operations. So we operate in multiple channels with regard to fitness delivery. Our clubs range from 11,000 square feet to 85,000 square feet. Our newest club is going to be 70,000 square feet, part of a 200,000 square foot sportsplex. That'll open in June. So we have experience and background in a lot of different aspects of customer service, retention, the challenges in downtown markets, suburban markets, urban markets, how that plays with increased competition. So hopefully there'll be some things today that we share that you'll say, yeah, that's something I might be able to take back and do something with. I'm not a professional speaker, so I always get a little nervous when I start my presentations at IRSA. So I have to do a warm-up drill in order to calm myself, get a little energy from the room, and then once we get through that, I should get into a good rhythm. All right? So I need you to bear with me while we do the boxing match. Okay. Can you hear me okay in the back? Okay, you guys are team blue. Got it? You guys are team red. Good friend of mine is next door presenting. His name is Kevin Heater. I told him my group would be louder than his group. All right, so we're going to do this to try and rattle his group before we get going. Team Blue, your job is when I say, good morning, my name is Bill McBride, I've got some pearls of wisdom that I will impart upon you today. You're all to say as loud as you can, thank you. Got it? Team Red, when I say, good morning, my name is Bill McBride, and I have some pearls of wisdom that I will impart upon you today. Your job is to say as loud as you can, yeah, right. Got it? Okay, here we go. Good morning, my name is Bill McBride. I have some pearls of wisdom to impart upon you today.
Thank you! Good morning. My name is Bill McBride. I have some pearls of wisdom to impart upon you today. Thank you very much for that warm greeting. So much better. What is that about? That's about what our members are thinking when we try to serve them, right? They are either very thankful for what we're trying to do for them, or they're very skeptical. You know, what's in it for you? What are you trying to get out of me? Okay? And everything we do, regardless of our intentions and motives, our members are judging. How many of you have ever had a member that no matter what you did, you couldn't please? Show of hands. Damn, you guys are lousy operators. We all have it, right? So be thinking about that, that the member needs you to prove and earn their loyalty. It is not a given. What we're going to cover today, we're going to do an industry overview, which basically is going to show you some things that have changed in the last 12 months in our industry. For those of you that get information from IRSA and Michael Scott Scudder and trends, it's a condensation, a condensing of that information into some trends and things that I see happening. What we're trying to collectively accomplish based on the challenges going on in the industry right now, what I think is the ideal business approach to health club management, and some things hopefully that you can take away and go, hey, we should probably consider implementing some of this stuff, or that gives me an idea that I want to go change something else. You with me? So the first thing is there's currently estimated 35,000 health clubs in the country. 14,000 are chains, franchises, licensees. These include professionally managed and owned and independents like Curves and Golds and so forth. 6,000 nonprofits, 1,000 limited service studios, 14,000 independents. And by current estimations, there's still only 41 million health club members in America. We're running 3 years of stagnant net membership growth, if you will, across the landscape. I don't know about you, but are any of you suffering from intense competition in your markets right now over the last 12 months? Show of hands. Even though there's more clubs than ever, same number of members, 2005 and 2004 were the last major Wall Street plays, if you will, in the industry. IPO for TSI, Town Sports International, operates as Washington Sports Club, Boston Sports Club, New York Sports Clubs. They're up to 145 facilities, and they're achieving some growth. Lifetime Fitness, category killer, big box, $49 membership, $99 family in some markets, 100,000 square feet in some markets, a model that gets up to 10,000 members, typically try to own the real estate, up to 58 large facilities. Health and Fitness Corporation, we compete with them in our management group, up to 400 units nationwide, the largest player in the management space. Curves is over 9,000 stores. It's incredible. Curves is over 9,000 stores. So what you've got here, you've got LA Fitness, Fitness 19. You've got a lot of different people coming in and expanding in the marketplace right now. There is no longer a typical health club. The model is different. And many, many operators are going after various aspects of the market. We're going to talk about that a little bit. I personally think it's too much growth too fast. I think supply is outpacing demand. I'm all for healthy competition, but enough is enough sometimes. Michael Scott Scudder says that we need to either get a huge increase in membership or we need less clubs based on having the same growth that we were experiencing in the past in the market. Okay, he estimates there's about 5,000 too many clubs based on what we were seeing before. Clubs around the country for the first time in the last 10 years, declining membership base, net membership. Now I know we're not talking about your clubs, but there's other clubs, declining membership base. It is a different time right now. Consumer Sentiment Index measures short-term confidence, consumers' confidence on their spending in the next 6 to 9 months. How confident am I in my ability to spend money on certain things in the next 6 to 9 months has dropped. Discretionary income, people's take-home pay as compared to bare necessities or basic necessities has dropped. 53% of the clubs, multi-purpose, 47 fitness only. I believe that's the highest number of fitness only in the industry. So you're seeing a lot more growth in the fitness only sector.
66% of clubs are individually owned and operated. 34 multi-club owned. So that still means, that means two things. Two-thirds of the industry is still relatively independent versus call it chain or professionally managed, which puts these clubs, these independent type clubs, in a position for two things. One, further consolidation, where national and regional players can come in and buy up clubs and take market share that way. But what's happening right now is that a lot of club companies are just ignoring the fact that these clubs are in the market and coming in anyway. Have any of you seen that? So that's even worse for independent club operators, because instead of them buying your club or offering you a premium or avoiding your market, what they're saying to some degree is, we don't think you're really that relevant and you really won't affect us. We're either going to create market share or take yours. That's what they're saying. So in the club size group, 34% of clubs now are less than 20,000 square feet. That's the biggest amount of clubs in the country. Of course, the influx of curves help drive that number up. 29% are 60,000 square feet or more. So typically the less than 20,000 square feet operate in the lower price point, correct? Not always, but a lot of times they're in the lower price point. So this is the highest number, highest percentage of the industry that we've seen in this smaller sector. 20 years ago, there were only 9,222 clubs. There's 35,000 now. How many of you were in the industry 20 years ago? Keep them up. Look around at everybody that's been here 20 years or more. Remember the good old days? No such thing. Nostalgia. Remembering things the way it never was. Over the last 5 years, there's been about an average of 2,000 clubs per year coming online. Last year and a half, there's been over 5,000 clubs. Also concerning is 2004 to 2005, 1.9 million less non-member users of health clubs. Anybody depressed yet? Over the last 10 years, 20% revenue growth per member. 20% sounds like a big number. 2% a year, less than inflation. Not so great. More women are joining clubs. Currently, IHRSA data shows that 57% of membership is women, 43% of men. That would be the largest disparity that has ever existed, if this is correct. Now, why am I sharing that? Because it's a good idea to know exactly what you're doing with regard to your fitness delivery system and programs. Who are you appealing to? Are you appealing to the members that you have? Are you not appealing to people that you could be getting with regard to making changes in your offering? Health club members make about $83,000 on average. General population makes about $66,000. Half of all club memberships are 75,000 or more. But this next statistic is interesting. The largest growth segment in the industry is the 50 to 75,000 range right now. Again, that corresponds back to the less than 20,000 square foot club, right? So what's going on now is you're now having operators that are being able to attract people that might not have been attracted based on higher dues points before. You're now expanding the market in the lower income brackets. People live all over. . 15.5% of the population are members of health clubs. This is how they break down by state. These are the top seven states. Colorado has the highest percentage. These are the city breakdowns. Population of the citizens of a city, how many are members of a health club?
Denver and Columbus, 14% leading the way. How many people are from one of these 10 states? Fifty-two percent of all health club members are in one of these 10 states. 48% of all the other members are in the other 40 states. So if you're in one of these states, you're in the highest competitive markets in the country. Fifty-eight percent of the growth in the industry is coming from the 6 to 17-year-olds. The last 5 years, they've had 58% growth in that market segment. Over 55, 9% growth. Currently, 12% of all members are under 18. A year ago, it was 9% of all members. Numbers jumped 3%. So what's this tell you? If we're having the same number of members and these two segments are growing, it means the other segments are shrinking. So it would be very good advice to pay attention to these two market segments in your programming and approach. With regard to opportunities. Trends in population health management. What does that mean? Population health management is the convergence of the medical community, the insurance community, corporate America with regard to their medical benefits, how those things play. Consumerism is on the rise. What consumerism is simply that companies are putting more ownership, accountability, burden, if you will, on the employee for their own health care. Companies are having higher deductibles. Companies are offering more health savings accounts. The amount of insurance plans in corporations right now that have increased their deductible to higher levels and added health savings accounts tripled in the last year. So companies are going to put more and more emphasis on the employee taking responsibility for their own health and well-being. There's integrating services focus. Companies like WebMD are buying promotion, health promotion content. Companies like Blue Cross are bringing health promotion inside. Companies are trying to buy up other companies to give themselves a full spectrum of disease management, claims analysis, health promotion, okay, to manage their healthcare costs. You're going to see that continue. What does that have to do with us here? Well, for us, for those in the management business, it has a lot to do. But even us in the regular commercial clubs, as companies put more and more pressure on their employees not to smoke, to eat better, to exercise, to do preventative screenings, they're going to need the health club industry to partner with them. The hub and spoke model. Even if I have an on-site facility, which are on the growth, I need all of my employees, regardless of where they work, to have access to these services in order to improve their health and productivity. Currently, 50% of all companies spend money on prevention for health care. 50% of all companies are spending money on health care prevention, either health promotion, HRAs, memberships, nutrition programming, on-site programming. But it's a huge number, and it's only going to grow. So what's all that mean? It basically means that you can't keep doing what we've always done and expect to get different results. I'm in a situation now where my attrition rate is 40% enterprise-wide. It was 44%. That's pretty good growth. But it should be 35% in my markets based on the transient nature. So we're looking at this situation saying, listen, 15% of the population isn't a health club member, or is a health club member. So 85% of the population don't belong to clubs, right? Everybody knows that. More and more clubs are coming into the market. Large club chains don't seem to really be too concerned with the competitive nature of markets they're going into. A lot of markets are over-clubbed and still having new clubs enter. So what does that tell you? It tells you that in order for us to succeed and thrive, we've got to do something differently as an industry. 25, 30 years into this industry, and we're still only at a 16% penetration rate of the population. I said it every year I've spoken. It's embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing to have that low of a penetration or saturation of the market and to have attrition rates close to 40% industry-wide. We have not figured this thing out yet. Some of us have, better than others, okay? But industry-wide, we have not flawlessly come up with a system, scalable system, that that keeps attrition low, that increases market share, and gets that penetration of more Americans exercising and coming into our clubs. Would you agree? Bless you. Okay, are we ready? I'm going to say, hey, I'm Bill. You guys say, welcome to the club. Hi, I'm Bill. You guys, the negative group. You say, you don't belong here. Got it? Hi, I'm Bill. Hi, I'm Bill. Okay, one more time. I need a little more energy. You guys look quiet. It's mornings, early first day. Hi, I'm Bill. Hi, I'm Bill. Okay. And that's what we tell our members, right? Some of our members, we say, welcome to the club. We love you. You fit in. Some of our members say, we say, you don't belong here. What are you doing here? How many of you say to your members that they don't belong here? Raise your hand. One honest man in the whole place. We do. How many of you have ever seen fitness people talking to some of the members on the fitness floor while not talking to others? Show your hand. If you're one of the others, what do you think you're reading? I don't belong here. It's funny, we sometimes talk to somebody, you need to start, we hired you, go out there and service people. And that's the prime directive, right? You've been hired, go service the members. So they go out to service the members and they immediately hone in on who in here looks friendly and looks like I can relate to. You do. Hi, I'm Bill. How's your program going? Do you need any help with anything today?
No.
Not good. Did you see the game this weekend? Well, you look like you're doing great. If you need anything, let me know. Great. You see the way I service him? He and I are connected. A couple more times, we're going to have an emotional connection. It's going to be great. What do you think this gentleman and these two lovely ladies were thinking? Besides, this is the goofiest presentation I've ever been in. What were they thinking? Why didn't you say hi to me? What's wrong with me? What makes that guy so special? Maybe I don't belong here. Right? And we do it all the time. And so it's one of those things where when you're on the fitness floor, you can't just service some people. You've got to have the approach that everything you do is inclusive and consistent. When you're in the locker room, or the hallway, or the parking lot, and you want to have that special further relationship stuff with members, which you're going to have, or your people are going to have, that's great. But on the fitness floor, where people are there for support, we got to be fair and consistent. Because the inclusive of some people typically means excluding other people. So something to be aware of. The problem I see with the industry right now is we're all trying to go after the same people. I'm almost ready to give up on direct mail because my response rates are really low right now. Okay, and even when I try to do differentiation, messaging, and so forth, you wind up falling back to thinking you need call to action, call to action, call to action. I need leads. And as an industry, a lot of times we're advertising to the same people. If you go look at the health club ads in your market, some look slicker than others, but most of them are pretty consistent. You know, percentage off the registration fee, 3-day trial, 1-day trial, zero reg, $19 a month. I mean, you look through all the things, and there's different styles, but they're all going towards people that are looking to join a health club, and we want them to pick us as the solution. Mostly agree? Okay. So that means that we're all spending our advertising dollars on trying to appeal to 15% of the market. So I think the bigger issue, instead of the mission or purpose of the business, as Jerry Faust calls it, the rock, top line would be, we want members of health clubs to be members of our health club. That's kind of how the industry is going now. We want members of health clubs to be members of our health club. And I suggest that that paradigm be changed a little bit for us to stay current with what's happening in the market, that people are unfit and would like to be fit and healthy. So the difference there, that people are unfit and would like to be fit and healthy, this means that I want to try and pull in, attract, serve the unmet needs of the market. I want to serve those people that wouldn't necessarily consider coming to a health club. And that's not easy, but it's what it's going to take to get the growth rates that we all desire. How many of you have capacity at your club? You could fit a few more members in. How many are completely full? See me afterward. Like to get some advice and find out why you were here. No. So I think it's got to shift to where, how are we going to meet the unmet needs of the marketplace? All of us have a purpose statement, a mission statement of some sort that says we want to improve the quality of people's lives. We want to help other people achieve fitness. We want to whatever that is. And there's two pieces that kind of feed into that. There's the organization piece, and then there's the club team. The organization piece is, even if you're a single club operator, you have a back of the house in your club, correct? You handle your billing somehow, you handle your marketing somehow. Those two pieces converge to figure out the delivery system. How are you going to serve the member? With us, it's pretty simple. We try to keep it basic. Is what we are doing supporting enrolling people into this lifestyle? Is it supporting connecting people into their area of play? Is it supporting creating brand loyalty and retention? And if you keep it simple with this on the forefront of your mind, you'll find yourself doing a lot of things daily that do nothing to drive your business. How many people have ever been so busy they couldn't take care of the members? And if you're in your office, not with your members, that would be an example of that, right? And it happens everywhere. People are too busy doing their jobs that they can't take care of the members. And you think about that. Think about housekeepers. Think about trainers. Think about people that you just see. It's human nature. I'm too busy doing my job where I can't take care of the member. So, critical. So our retention model is simply this. We believe that there is no retention program. We use a program. We actually use retention management software to help us as one of our tools. But there is no program. There is no end-all, be-all. Retention is simply everything you do, right? Every touch point, every single thing you do to make a difference for the member. So we've broken ours into basically five categories. We enroll a member into the lifestyle. We try to get them in the first 30 days onboarded. Call that whatever you will. Orientation, quick start, program design, three sessions included in your membership, whatever that is. But we try to get them plugged in and comfortable in the space. Then we try to find where they're going to connect. Are they a cardio person? Do they like to pick up heavy objects? Do they like to swim? You know? Do they like to sleep? I mean, do yoga? Do they like to, you know, what are they? What kind of person are they? How are they going to fit in? Are they mind-body? Are they fitness? Are they athletic? Are they sports? How do they plug in their area of play? Because we know if they don't plug in and it's working out, it won't last. It's got to be play, right? When we were kids, we played. Now that we're adults, we have to work out, right? Which sounds funner? Is funner a word? More fun. I like funner. Playing or working? So, connection is about finding the area of play. How many of you are under-resourced? You could use more staff in an ideal, perfect world. Okay. Most of us are. The margins aren't that great, and we run as lean as we comfortably can to protect safety and service and cleanliness. And invariably, members fall out of the system. They start with good intentions, and they drop out. or they enroll and never start, right? Do you guys have a few of those members? I call that intervention of at-risk members, members that are at risk of quitting. Now, back in my formal life when I was with Sport and Health, we learned that 12 weeks before a member quit, their frequency would reduce, okay? So that meant that if I stopped using the club as much and continued on that path, 12 weeks from now, I would quit my membership. So we gave it a few weeks for false positives, people that were sick, people that were on vacation, and then we tried to come up with an intervention plan where we would contact that person and say, hey, we noticed you haven't been using the club as much. We want to find out if everything's okay. Can we do anything to support you? Now, the concept there is if we can get this person to reengage before they've made a decision to quit, that's pretty powerful, right? Because people don't just slack off for a couple weeks and say, oh, I got to quit my membership. It usually goes a little bit of time, and they say, oh, man, what am I spending money on this for? So the concept was intervening of the at-risk member with behavioral modification programs, another training session, some type of coaching, whatever that looked like to get them re-engaged and back in the connection phase. And then loyalty programs. Forever, our loyalty program was simply, you've been a member for 10 years, we really appreciate it, we'd like to give you another dues increase. Have you ever heard that? Have you ever done a dues increase? The members go, man, I've been a member forever, I can't believe you're raising your dues. You're like, your dues, you joined in 1918, and your dues are only $10 a month now that I've raised them 30%. You know, but you're charter members, right? So what we do is we look at our members and say, okay, how many people are well below our current rates? Is there a need to raise some of those folks in order not to have to raise our current rates too much? And we do this analysis every year. But a loyalty program. So what are you doing for members that have been there for a long time? What are you doing for members to recognize and show appreciation for their years of service? Is there a loyalty program with regard to a party? Is there a 10-year award? Is there a 10-year t-shirt? Is there an embroidered workout warm-up suit with their name and 10 years at the club? Is there, you know, a wall? Members that have been here 20 years, a wall of fame or honor roll. What are you doing for your long-term members? You know, that kind of thing. Your long-term members tend to be some of your biggest promoters. I was in a session with Jerry Faust yesterday, and he really crystallized something that we all know. We have a confined catchment area in our clubs. People come to our clubs from a certain radius, right? Call it 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 3 miles, 5 miles, 2 miles, 1 mile, whatever it is, two blocks. But we all have a catchment area that's pretty definite. And everything we do in our club walls contaminates or fosters our reputation in that catchment area. And so when you have a club poorly managed and then new management comes in, fixes everything, and then the referrals don't go up immediately and corporates don't go up immediately, it can be frustrating. And the issue there is that you've polluted the pool. Your practices, your people, your interactions have polluted the pool. How many of you have ever come into a club situation where you were having to do repair for reputation issues that occurred prior to your arrival? You know exactly what I'm talking about, right? All of that feeds in to the loyalty of your members and their perceptions of you. Okay, did everybody stand up? Put your pads down. Face this wall. Shuffle up to the person in front of you. Shuffle up. Put your hands on their shoulders. Give them a good rub. Come on, massage it like you mean it. First day at IHRSA, you want to be relaxed. You got a big week ahead of you. You guys missed out. Come on, rub it like you mean it. Okay, turn around, face the other wall. Don't stop. I got a lot of tension right in my neck and shoulder area. Okay, sit down. How many people have heard about the Net Promoter Score? Show of hands, Net Promoter Score. Okay, what Net Promoter Score is, Harvard Business Review wrote an article. It's been several years now, probably at least three, if not four, that basically said that if you ask your members or your customers this question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to refer somebody to this business? You got it? Scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to refer somebody to this business? The 9s and the 10s are called net promoters. These are your people that are raving fans. These are the people that just, something goes wrong, they're not going to complain. They're going to try and help you solve the problem. They're going to try and help you fix it. Okay? Your 7s and your 6s are statistically irrelevant. These are people that get what they expect. They're never going to say anything bad about you, and they're probably not going to say anything really good about you. They're just kind of in there. They're not promoting and they're not detracting. And then your 6s and below, these are detractors. These are people that are your enemies with regard to what they're doing to your business in the marketplace. These are 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0s. These people, whenever they have an opportunity, are saying things about how you can't get it right. Oh my God, you do not want to join Bob's club. They mess up the billing. They kept EFTing me after I quit. They're just incompetent. They're unbelievably pathetic. Right? And there'll be different degrees of those people depending on how emotionally disconnected they are with regard to your practice. So the concept was, how can you get a tangible metric for businesses to use to see how they're doing? And basically, companies that had high net promoter scores were growing. Companies that had low scores were declining. And one of the highest was Southwest Airlines. They scored in the 60s. Okay? The average across all American businesses was 16. Okay? So we did this drill. And anybody want to guess what our first number was the first year we did it without Club One people speaking? Take a guess. How much? 70. 7? 7? Oh, no, no. It's out of 1 to 10. No, on if the average is 16 and a high score is 60, where do you think a company that I am affiliated with would rank? Knowing how good I am at this point, take a guess. Okay, nobody wants to play? We were 17. 1 point better than average. I was humiliated. We did it again the next year. We're up to 24. We're going to do it again. Hopefully we're shooting to be 33 or better. And it's a great, great article that tells you how to go about this process. And a lot of club companies are doing it now. They're just incorporating this one question in their survey and then tracking this independent. If you want the article, give me your business card and I'll email it to you from the Harvard Business Review. Another thing that was pointed out is there's an error in your books on this handout for this session. It's got somebody else's handout in the middle of my handout, and the sequencing's out. It starts on number 10 out of the top 20 things. So apologize that error exists. If you would like the proper handout, I'll email that to you too. Okay? So what we found was clubs that did well with facilities. We were good at cleanliness, housekeeping, amenities, everything was tip-top.
The basic. We got a club. It's open and it's nice. We scored in the teens on the Net Promoter Score with those clubs. Clubs that had good programming, good variety, good class schedules, solid programs and offerings, scored in the 20s. Clubs that had excellent people, educated, service-oriented, scored in the 30s. And only the clubs that had what I'll call the X factor scored in the 40s or better. And what that X factor is that dynamic of not just great people in a great club with great programs all doing their thing, but it's that dynamic of everybody doing their thing as a team. Have you ever worked with great people, but it seemed like it was very disconnected? Yes? In those circumstances, you can do well. You can get in the 20s, 30s. But to really get that buzz, that magic, that energy that we all want to get in our clubs, you know what I'm talking about, right? That undescribable essence of, wow, they just got it going here. You've been in those clubs. You probably manage those clubs. And you also, if you manage those clubs, you've also had periods of time where it was in jeopardy a little bit. You hired the wrong person. They started, right? So the member experience, the wow factor, really culminates with not just great people, but this team approach, not ego-driven, not independent, I'm the most educated, but a common team working together. We looked at our teams when we were going through this drill and said, we got some of the best trainers in the country. I mean, we got master's educated individuals who have been training 5-10 years that have, you know, certifications, unbelievable stuff. Why aren't we getting in the 50s and 60s in these clubs with our service delivery and our member satisfaction? What's going on here? So we wrote down all the traits that our key best people had. What are they good at? What are they not so great at? And we realized that we were hiring some of the wrong talent. We were hiring for some of the wrong things. One of my fitness directors called it, we gotta start hiring social scientists instead of scientists. For those of you that have been around for a long time, remember back in the day that friendly, nice people became fitness trainers because they like to be in the club? And they also sold the membership? And they also pick up the weights, and they also clean the locker room. Any of you remember those people? That was a fun time. Then we got, as an industry, this is all normal, right? We got all mature and educated. We need exercise physiology to take care of our members. So we went pendulum swings all the way to the right. We went very clinical, very scientific, very highbrow, okay? And then we kind of lost some of that community, fun, family, you know, just like being here kind of stuff. And now we're looking, it's coming back, right? Now we're talking about people that have psychology backgrounds becoming trainers, and people that understand behavioral modification. It comes back. So the friend, one of my team members called it social scientists. We need the people that social, but also have, you know, the expertise. So we identified the 10 things that we felt everybody we hired that touches our members should have as traits. And this is what we came up with, and they're not in any particular order. Otherwise, 10 would be number one. But we wanted people that were team builders and like to be on a team. And we would ask questions now about that. You know, what do you like to do as far as sports? Tell me about your most engaging job you've ever had. What did you like most about it? We try to find out, are they solo, independent, results-oriented, give me my list, let me do my thing? Or do they flourish working in a collaborative team approach? Need to drive revenue, right? Need to drive revenue. We wanted people that had an accountability, an ownership mentality. And we always say that.
But it's very, very critical to probe into the responsibility of an individual. How responsible are they? And people tend to be responsible in general. It's just a matter of what they choose to be responsible to or for, right? So really finding out their value system of what they're committed to. Because if they're committed to the same things, then we'll tend to have people responsible for the same things. And by that I mean, we've interviewed candidates that we so much wanted to hire. They had the halo effect. They were qualified. The resume was great. They knew their stuff, a proven track record of performance with regard to revenue. But they didn't have that. It was a me, me, me. It's about me. I can do this. I can do that. You with me? And it doesn't fit because you will never get to the wow factor with a bunch of me, me, me's running around. The only way you can get to the wow factor is if I'm helping you, you're helping me, and we're in it together. So, social skills. We found out that we had actually slipped up on hiring social skills in lieu of certifications and degrees. That we weren't really spending the time making sure that we had the most charismatic, social supporting type of people. Got to be willing to improve all the time. Coaching is big. Values we talked about. Communication skills. You think it's a given, right? Of course you're going to hire people. But do a little writing test with your trainers and your group fitness people. Ask them how they would respond to this scenario. Give them a scenario of a member experience gone bad and see how they craft their response. Most of them will be genuine, sweet, passionate, but check the grammar and the spelling and the structure of sentences and take a look at that. And then create templates that you can give your staff to use in those circumstances because it all represents your business. Flexible optimism. Has anyone shown up at work and something went wrong with your facility? A steam room down, possibly. Show of hands? Ever? Sauna? Pool heater? Club open late? Instructor show up late? Run out of towels? Damn, you guys are shitty operators. Good thing you're here. Another 40 minutes, you'll be all fixed. Flexible optimism. What is flexible optimism? It's the ability to drive on with a good attitude when all the shit hits the fan. Sorry if I offended anybody with the S word. Things are going to go wrong in our clubs. They always were going to go wrong in our clubs. There's always going to be stuff we're dealing with. You need people on your staff that don't freak out about everything that goes wrong. You know, yeah, our sauna's down again. I don't know why they don't just fix it once and for all. It's just like they just keeps breaking, you know, and they get all worked up. Like, and it's hard because members come at you pretty hard when things go wrong. So you've got to hire that resiliency, that people that just don't take it personally, that know that it's all going to be okay. We're taking care of it. Thank you for pointing it out. You know, that can have that. We call it flexible optimism. That, you know, I started with this list and I finished with this list, and it's all good. And then the biggest is the desire to be of service to others. This is a big deal. It's amazing how many people in the fitness business are more involved in fixing problems, i.e. conditions of members or issues that members have with regard to their fitness, versus serving the member. There's a lot of you know, call it what you will, but looking at the member in an integrated, holistic, how can I make you feel good here and be a part of this for a long, long, long time? You know, I'd like you working out once a week for the rest of your life and six times a week for 6 weeks, even though once a week is going to be a long road to get real results. You with me? Anybody have any questions at this point? Yes, ma'am. This is primarily for our commercial group and our community centers, and our leadership and our management group has had exposure to it and been involved in it, but some of the nuances are different. Most of our commercial, our corporate stuff isn't revenue driven. Yeah. So if I were in a non-revenue driven site, I would figure out what it is. And there may be a health promotion piece there. There may be a piece with regard to population saturation. You know, what are we doing to...
Any other questions at this point? You sure? Okay. This is an old slide that I just can't get myself to cut out of my presentation. A very, very old slide. This data may not be accurate with regard to the percentage, but I'm pretty confident that the ratios are still pretty close. Okay? What this says is 68% of the people that leave businesses are leaving because of attitude and indifference by staff. Not because of competition, not because of dissatisfaction, issues involved. 68% are leaving because you didn't make me feel appreciated. You didn't make me feel like you really wanted me here. You didn't make me feel like I belong, right? How many of you have frequented somewhere where you didn't feel like you mattered? Who can share an example, a recent example of that? Where you went to a business, you frequented a business, and you were like, man, they don't really care if I'm here or not. Who can share an example of that? Would you mind standing? Now you'll go back to Walgreens, right? Did you notice the nuances of what she said? First words out of her mouth. Tell me a story where you felt like you didn't matter. First words out of her mouth. I went to Walgreens. Okay? I was treated poorly. Very, very poorly. I was pissed. Okay? She was done with the conversation with me. I said, would you go back? Oh, yeah. It's close, and the lady I normally deal with is great. You with me? She would have never got to that second part unless somebody asked. She would have left, gone back to work. Oh, God. What happened? Oh, just had the worst experience at Walgreens. Did you tell a couple people about that day? Yeah, you did. Okay. So back in the day, when there weren't a lot of choices, people would still come to our clubs, even when we blew it. Because it was close. Right? Now there's more options, a lot more options in some cases. And when you blow it, you piss them off. And even though you've got all those deposits in the account, you're only as good as your last encounter. We all know this stuff, right? But one front desk interaction can cost you whatever your annualized dues are, plus all the referrals and ancillary revenue, plus polluting the catchment area, polluting your backyard, with wonderful, trustworthy, lovely people like this out saying,
I was at Bob's Club, and this staff member had no respect whatsoever. I will never go back in there. How many of you want that said in your 1 mile radius of your club to everybody that'll listen? Show of hands. Okay. See, you guys are almost fixed. Just kidding. No one was broken. All right. So, what happens? Now, if I were the young gentleman at Walgreens, what's your name, ma'am? Hi, Susan. And I saw Susan walk away visibly. And I said, excuse me, ma'am. Play with me, please. Excuse me, ma'am. I just realized I was distracted because I was in the middle of something and I didn't treat you the way I should have treated you. I apologize for being hurt with you when I rang you up. And as you walked away, it just kind of hit me what I had done. And I'm really sorry about that. I hope you have a nice day. Okay? What do you think she's going to say now? Oh, that poor guy was having a bad day. You know, I made him stop what he was doing and he helped me. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be a different story, right? Airline loses your luggage. They find it. They give you a free ticket. They deliver your luggage to the house. What do you say about the airline? Damn good airline. Right? Lost your stuff. Somebody had your underwear in their room somewhere. But they're a damn good airline. Oh my God, they're a great airline. Lost your stuff. Didn't get it to you. Why are they a great airline? Because the way they fixed it, right? So, what this next slide, that for some reason these are auto-advancing, and I'm not going to stop it now. What this next slide shows is customer loyalty based on stuff going wrong or not. Okay? People are most loyal to your business when something goes wrong and you fix it quickly. Something goes wrong and you fix it quickly. That's when they're most loyal to your business. Something goes wrong and you eventually fix it, they're a little loyal. Unresolved complaints is higher than no complaints. How can you explain that anomaly? Bingo. Who was that? Yeah, they care. People that don't complain at all don't care as much. People that are complaining are vested emotionally in your business. They care. You know, your complainers tend to be some very good advocates for your business. But what happens on this complaint issue is there's a normal expectation line. People have an expectation. They're going to pay their dues. You're going to open on time. Certain things are going to happen, right? And when something goes wrong, they drop below the expectation line. They tend to think of you as incompetent, uncaring, whatever it is. So if you quickly address that and fix it, not only do you get back here, but you build loyalty. You build affinity to your product and who you are. Why? Because you have lowered their expectation with the disappointment. They don't think very highly of you when things are wrong. And they're assuming the worst. So when you fix it, it exceeds dramatically their expectations. So the moral of the story is, to engineer into your system a lot of stuff to go wrong and fix it quickly. Fortunately enough, there's enough stuff that goes wrong anyway that we don't really have to engineer it into the system. But coming up with recovery systems to quickly resolve whatever it is you're trying to resolve and responding even when things go wrong. Now, a lot of this, what I'm speaking of today, you're going, yeah, we get it. And you probably do get it. But do the staff back in the clubs get it? Does everyone understand that every one of these conversations is a make or break moment for your business? What's happening with regard to your recovery system throughout your club? And it can't be simply something goes wrong, offer somebody a comp of some sort. It's got to be a sincere.
This is an interesting perspective because when it all comes down to it, it's strictly who we hire. Who we hire, and are they clear about the vision and expectations? People are hired for what they know. You look at the resume, you ask them about their skill set, you find out if they're qualified, right? And we hire people for what they basically are experienced and know how to do. When we fire them, typically, it's not for what they know about the job. How many of you have fired people that knew how to do the jobs? Every hand should raise, right? This industry, and most industries, don't fire a lot of people for bad performance. Typically, we fire people for something they did that was a violation of integrity, right? A violation of team value system. They couldn't play well with others. They took something they shouldn't have. They were unreliable, didn't show up repeatedly. Whatever those things are, right? So, and people are promoted for results. And this is good to think about when you're hiring people. And share with people. We don't want to fire people for who they are. So we really need to get to know you before we hire you. We really need to know, obviously you're qualified, or I wouldn't be meeting with you based on your background. But let's talk about what you're committed to. Let's talk about your value system. Let's talk about if you fit in here. I've had very qualified, competent people choose not to work for me because they were like, I don't want to work with this guy. I've had very competent people that I've chosen not to work with that will be beautiful in another major health club company around the block because their culture is much different from our culture. Okay? If you don't play well with others, you can't play with us. It just doesn't work with our system. But this is a good, simple way to work with your department heads and your staff in the hiring process. A little cheat sheet, if you will. Stuff on the left, we can teach you. Stuff on the right, we pretty much need you to come to the table with. Again, if you want this full presentation, I'll email it to you, okay? Just bring your card up. How many young ladies have done ballet as a kid? I know you, so I'm not going to pick on you. Did you have your hand raised? Can I pick on you? What do you need to have to do ballet? What stuff? Physical stuff, not like material stuff, not coordination and stuff like that. Things. What do you need? Toe shoes? Toe shoes, what else? Leotard, what else? Tutu, what else? Are leg warmers still in existence? 80s or 70s? What else? A bar, okay. Did you have those things? Great. What do you need to do ballet? Got to be interested in it? Yep. What else? You all can play. What do you need to do ballet? Show up, practice. Is it recitals? Do recitals, right? Did you do all that stuff? Excellent. Did you or did you not become a prima ballerina? You didn't. What? There's no way. You had the stuff, you did what you were supposed to do, but yet you didn't become a prima ballerina. Anybody else have the stuff, do the stuff, and not become a prima ballerina? Raise your hand. I see. How many of you are married? Most people, I assert, when they're married, when they get married, the day they get married, they want to have a happy marriage. Correct? Most people?
Most people, if you gave them an intellectual test about what it takes to have a happy marriage, they could pick most of the right answers.
Consideration, loyalty, love, compassion. Right?
How many people have a happy marriage? Not in this room. All of you have a happy marriage. You're happy people.
But the other people, 50% get a divorce, right? First time, 60% second divorce rate. Do you think that some of the people that don't get divorced are unhappy? Do you know any unhappy married people?
Okay, so obviously that doesn't work. And so this whole model doesn't work, and this is kind of how people approach life. What do I want to have? What do I need to do so I can get it or be it? Okay. Stephen Covey calls it see, do, get. All right. Mitch Wald taught me be, do, have. But the concept is you change the paradigm. You change the way you look at it. Who am I going to be? If I'm going to be a dancer, okay, Grishnikov, you know Grishnikov? He's a dancer. It's not about having dance stuff or doing dance. The guy's a dancer. Because he's a dancer, he does what dancers do, has what famous dancers have. So if I'm going to be, if I want to have a happy marriage, what do I got to do? I got to be a great spouse. Now, if I'm a great spouse, I'll do what great spouses do, and I'll have what great spouses have, happy marriages. All right? So what are you saying? This is obviously obvious. Bricklayers, right? My bricklayer story. Three people laying bricks. First person, what are you doing? I lay bricks. They give me a paycheck. Second person, what are you doing? I lay bricks. I make a living. I provide for my family. Third person, what are you doing? Stands up, brushes himself off. I'm building a cathedral. Who do you want working your front desk? A front desk checker inner person? A communication center technician? Or somebody that's making a difference in people's lives? Who do you want at your front desk? Because all three, they're doing the same things, tactically speaking, all right? You want the cathedral builder. You want the person transforming people's relationship to their health and well-being. No one walks in and out of this club without me making a positive impact on their day, period. That's who you want at your front desk, right? So Be Do Have is a pretty powerful tool to look at not only how you approach your life, how your staff approaches their life, but how your members approach their life. This changes the conversation from, do you want to lose weight? Yes. I'd like to lose weight. How many pounds? 15. Great. We need you to exercise, eat less, get the membership card in your wallet, and you'll be on your way. Doesn't work. Okay? But you go into a different conversation. Why do you want to lose the weight? What's going to be different when you lose the weight? How many people that are obese that lose weight, gain the weight back? Huge amount, right? Why? Because they still look at themselves and see an obese person that's skinny. And if I'm obese in my head, I've got to fulfill and live according to how I see myself. We never operate inconsistent with how we see ourselves. Ever. Ever. So it's a pretty good tool to have conversations with new staff and existing staff, but primarily new staff when you're coming in to talk about what you're about. This is the Jack Welch G evaluation model, if you will. We take our employees when we're trying to figure out this wow factor. How do we create wow? We look at our employees and we put them in these boxes. In the top right box is high values, high performance. These are the people that are like you. You're aligned with the value system of who you work with. You perform, you deliver. It's all good. What do you do to manage these people?
What'd you say?
Get out of their way quickly.
Right?
Get out of their way. Support them. Recognize them. Let them do their thing. What do you do on the people on the bottom left? Low value system, not aligned. You know, as soon as you're not there, they're wearing the baseball cap.
What name tag?
You know, late, whatever it is. Bottom left. What do you do with those people?
Fire them.
Fire them quickly. Don't lose any sleep. They're not performing and they're not on your team. What do you do with the people on the top left? They're aligned value-wise. They're, go Club One. This is the best company I've ever worked with. I love it here. Bill, please let me retire here.
You're in sales and you haven't sold a membership in 6 years. We're going to need some productivity.
What do you do with those people? Anyone? Beautiful, right? Coach them. Get them over to that right-hand quadrant or get them in the right job. Getting them in the right job might mean getting them in the right job somewhere else, okay? I don't have a lot of extra jobs laying around. So sometimes that requires just having the frank conversation. Listen, it's not working out, but I love you. I'd like you to try and find a new job, and I'd like to help you find a new job, okay? And then work them out on some period of time, all right? I'm not asking you to not be compassionate, but you've got to hold people accountable because so often we let people hang around and not be productive and not get better, and then 6 years down the road, they look back and go, why did you guys let that happen? Now I have suffered in my skill set. I'm not promotable somewhere else. You've wasted my time by not being fair to me. Bottom right, I am the superstar. I am the reason your club is successful. I produce. I don't have to wear the uniform. I don't like the colors. I went to college. I'm not a janitor. It's not my job to clean equipment. How dare you? Any of those people ring a bell? Okay, what do you do with those folks?
You just really don't know how good I am, do you?
You fire them if you can't get them where they need to be. Okay? If somebody's producing for you and they're competent, you want to make sure that you've done your job and your share of giving them an opportunity to understand what you're about and why you're about it. Okay? I would spend 30, 60, no more than 90 days on those people trying to coach them. If you can't coach them, you've got to fire them because what are they doing? Poisoning, right? Beautiful. Poisoning the rest of the staff and your catchment area. Organizations broken out. This is another thing that you want to keep in mind. How many of you are general managers or owners? Raise your hand. Okay. This is another industry thing you want to think about. And basically what it says is startup organizations and our industry is relatively immature as an industry. High entrepreneurship, lack of discipline. All right. Have you had any clubs that had a lack of discipline but were very creative? That you've worked with? We do. Fitness people are creative, they're passionate, you have multiple clubs, each club's got a little bit of its own culture, all right? We want to do it our way. This is a great idea that everybody else is doing, but we want to just change it just a little bit. Can you relate to that? Okay, by doing that, you can't get scale and you can't get consistency from people to people to people. Great organizations have high discipline and still have the high entrepreneurship. So certain things with your brand, with your delivery system, need to be non-negotiable. Okay? And certain things need to be creative entrepreneurship to pull people's ideas in to enhance that brand experience. Does this make sense? Not going to go into a lot of detail, but the example would be if you had multiple clubs and every one of them answered the phone differently. But they were all very good, okay? Each club had their own little flavor to it. One club said, good morning. One club said, have a great day, okay? Consistency would be the discipline. All clubs are going to answer the phone the same way because when anybody calls multiple sites, we want the same brand experience. So what's non-negotiable and what can you foster so people can have involvement and creativity with regard to your programming primarily? Disney, three interactions, right? Magic, misery, neutral. The goal with any retention program or fitness delivery program is to create more magical moments. It's not a matter of exceeding expectations. It's a matter of serving and satisfying the customer. You exceed expectations consistently, you're going to raise the bar, and you're going to continuously have to exceed. You've got to have a system that totally meets the needs of each customer through the interactions. So to kind of go through the approach that I'm kind of talking about, hire the right people. The pre-selection process, the time spent getting to know the person, not just the skill set, is the most important use of your time. Selling the right way, onboarding properly, building the connectivity, and go through that connection, plug them in, have the loyalty program. Okay, that's the model. So what we strive for, we don't get it right every time, but what we strive for is you come into the club, you're going to have three touch points. You're going to be greeted, you're going to be bid a farewell, and wherever you go in the club, we're going to connect with you. We're going to touch you. If you go into fitness, somebody has got to make contact with you. You go to group fitness, you get a massage, whatever you're doing, there's three distinct touch points. You don't go into one of our clubs. I've been in clubs before where I went in, worked out, left without anybody saying a word to me. Have you ever experienced that? Okay. Three connections. Sales is more critical now than ever. Transactional sales models don't work. Members, we've been focused on our early quits. People that join our club and don't make it past 6 months, big deal for us. We've got our early quits down to less than 3% of our total cancellations. You know, on 18,000, 2,400 sales, 80, 110, 120 people that will quit within the first 3 months. So we're really focused on getting people in that beginning plugged-in phase and reducing early quits. Things that sometimes are obvious that we slip away from is general managers or salespeople not following through after the sale. I want to sell a lifestyle of exercise adherence. I don't want to sell a membership. I want to sell a solution. Michael Scott Scudder calls this now that you've got to do more program selling than membership selling with this unserved market. All right. If I'm 85% of the people out there and I don't want to go to a health club and I don't trust health clubs and I've never been attracted to a health club, and you keep sending me information about buying a membership on a contract, I'm not going to do it. But if you let me come in for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and try something that serves me, we might have a better shot. So we're trying to enroll people into the lifestyle versus the transactional model of just selling the memberships. Every new member gets a call from the GM. Every new member. And you go, yeah, that's a good idea, but man, I got a couple hundred members a month. Man, that's a lot of people. Think about if you own the club, if you're not a club owner. And everybody that joined, their EFT was going into your bank account, and you needed to pay all your payroll out of your bank account. And every member were just precious to the success of your business. Would you, as the owner working in your club, would you or would you not personally thank every single person that did business with you? Yes or no? You would. And that we work for other people sometimes and we go, too many people to call. Welcoming somebody to the club is a huge, huge differentiator I'm the general manager of the club. I want to call and make sure you got taken care of when you joined. Do you have any other questions? Are you set up with our trainer? Whatever it is. But that goes a long, long way. We followed up with email, do some other things, but the personal phone call from the GM is very big. We're trying to break down the model of trainers and group fitness instructors. They're all trainers. We have group trainers, personal trainers, Pilates trainers. They're all trainers, and the leadership that supports them on a global basis all goes back and forth multidisciplinary. We no longer have just a fitness director, just a group director. All right, we have a fitness and program director that has people that just float. And we're going for a unified team where you teach some group, you do some reformer classes, you do some private, and cross-training them all in all the modalities. Now, I'm always going to be, you know, I might be mind-body, I might be Pilates, I might be cardio primarily. But we're finding that we're getting more and more support with one delivery team, knowing all the things they can plug the member in, instead of, if you're with me, you do personal training. Oh, Pilates, you have to go talk to the Pilates people. You with me? And it's starting to be very encouraging what we're seeing and what we're accomplishing with this model. Where, you know, back in the old days, fitness team, you couldn't tell who was sales, who was fitness, who was whatever. We all wore the same thing. We all served the same way. That baseline on the pyramid, you've got to nail all the basics. And in the handout is 20 basic action items that I think are very critical. Those are very self-explanatory. I don't have those built in to go over in the presentation. But there are 20 things that when you look at basic blocking and tackling, if you cover those 20 things with your staff and you score high on execution on those things, you'll see that your whole service delivery and consistency will improve. Does anybody have any questions about anything that we've talked about today? Anything whatsoever? All right. Well, that will conclude our session today. Thank you very much for your attention. Appreciate it. If you would like the presentation or the proper handout, bring me your business card and I'll email that to you next week.